Today I want to talk about culture, team building, on a level of companies as well as other types of organizations and groups. Culture exists in families. Culture exists obviously in countries, in societies, in cities. And a lot of the same strategies and techniques that work to kind of build culture and understand, you know, what the values are in a culture apply across the board. I've been fortunate enough, it's been part of my journey to run and start multiple companies. Currently, I'm involved at a high level management and ownership in about 7 businesses. And each one has its own nuances, has its own teams, has its own kind of set of operating agreements. And again, the way organizations and systems are set up at the beginning make a big difference and kind of set the tone for what the culture is going to be. Leadership, they say it starts at the top. I believe it. I believe it, and I've seen it firsthand, and I'm actually part of that experience, having started ideas, taken ideas into companies and formations and hiring teams around those concepts and essentially building a culture from scratch. And so I have some observations on that, as well as, again, we could always apply this conversation, and it's a good conversation to talk about the culture, let's say, in our country, you know, here in the U.S., for example. And you hear a lot of people talking about what's happening to us, and we're a country divided. You know, our culture's deteriorated, our values, in a lot of ways, our children aren't as educated as they were in the past or as they are in other countries. And we have a lot of issues, you know, across the board, so I do think there are cultural issues in our society. I don't want to spend, you know, a whole conversation on that, although I think it's a great conversation and it's happening in a lot of places. We talk here on the show about the whole NFL and professional sports issue as it relates to politics and, you know, latest news from the camp of Trump is taking an attack on, you know, one of the best athletes that we have in the modern era, LeBron James, and kind of insulting him and calling him out and saying that, you know, he's stupid and all that. And it's a continuation of the assault or the battle, let's say, you know, between Trump and other kind of, a certain kind of thinking and mentality and how that's been conflicted against, let's say, the stance that the NFL players have taken by kneeling and raising their fist during games as a sign of their basically protest of social inequities that they see in their cities and in their cultures, essentially as a way, as I see it, trying to improve their culture, raise awareness for issues that we're having, you know, in our societies. And so I think it's just, unfortunately, when it comes to culture on a country level, being an American myself, I would say there's a lot of things I'm proud of, a lot of cool aspects of our culture and certain components. I don't think it's all one culture or one way. Obviously, there's a ton of different diversity of thinking, diversity of interests, and diversity is one great component of a culture. You know, the freedom to think and have an opinion that's different than the person sitting to your left and your right. Now, bring that analogy back into a company and think about it. You know, if everyone is at a board meeting, or just at a normal weekly company meeting and people are on different pages, have different ideas, disagree, how is that kind of thing reconciled? I think that's one of the keys to at least something I strive for in terms of creating a culture of respect of ideas and between people. Having an open process where people discuss ideas before major decisions are made, but then when decisions are made, and this is where leadership comes into it, everyone can get aligned. Even if they didn't agree with the decision or still don't understand it, there has to be some sort of kind of hierarchy or some level of getting people in sync. So one of the great analogies that we hear about, and I think it's an excellent one, is that of a conductor. And the leadership team, whether it's in politics or in a company, being the conductors or the conductor, ideally, if there comes down to one conductor that is ultimately guiding the orchestra and making sure everyone's in sync and harmony, that everyone's playing in tune, that you know, the trumpets aren't too loud or the drums aren't too fast, because, you know, in some way the drums may set the tone for a certain song, you know, if it's a band playing, and but the conductor, the leader, has to still kind of guide that and make sure it's at the right pace. And so that's something I certainly struggle with and have my challenges with. As you may know, I'm involved in a number of companies that all operate under one umbrella, B Labs, which is the parent company, the venture builder. And it's been a great challenge, a great, great challenge. One of the great challenges of that is delegating and bringing other leadership in, and then knowing when to provide guidance and when to let go and stand back and give others the space to have their process and the space to actually take the reins on something and move the ball forward towards whatever the vision, agreed upon vision, is. So I think this all factors back to philosophy of what it takes to build a great organization, a great society, establishing a culture where it's okay, for example, in my opinion, to make mistakes, and not creating a culture where people are going to get shunned or embarrassed or yelled at if they make a mistake, because we are human and we make mistakes. And even in being in an advertising, marketing, kind of outbound communications business, we don't want people to see mistakes. We want everything to be perfect in the final product when it comes to websites, for example. And so therefore, there needs to be a QA process so that we can kind of help each other along the way. I just looked at a piece today, a marketing piece that almost went out to a big group that had some issues in it. Some of them had been printed. And so it went through a bunch of eyes, but it wasn't enough of a process, a QA process, to make sure all the mistakes were out. No one's going to get fired because of it or yelled at, but the point is there needs to be flexibility for the mistakes, but there also needs to be a process put into place to quickly identify and correct issues and errors where they're found. Do our politics work that way in most places, or at least, you know, here in the States? I don't know. I don't work in politics, so it's easy to be a critic, you know, from the outside and see the results that happen when politics don't flow well or smoothly or as harmoniously as this orchestra we talked about. And it seems like more of a battleground with people kind of going against each other in different camps. That's not what I'm looking for in the companies that I build and work with, right? This kind of thing where we could all have differences of opinion, talk about it, even vigorously dispute, debate, as long as that's done in a respectful way. And then leadership, however that's structured, sometimes it's a board of multiple people. It's not always one person calling all the shots. So, you know, this whole blockchain space and decentralization and concept of DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations, is a cool concept, you know, in theory, but we're yet to see how and where that actually works. Where there's no established leader and everything is completely spread out across the whole spectrum and everyone kind of gets their vote. Again, sounds nice, decentralized, kind of you don't have this dictator or someone that could manipulate and control everyone else. But is there necessarily more intelligence in the masses, in the crowds? My first instinct is actually no. It's not necessarily... you know, mob rule, in essence, isn't necessarily a high level of thinking. So I think it comes down to making sure we can get people kind of educated and raise the collective awareness so that at some level, people who do participate can do so intelligently and bring, you know, bring value in a respectful way and connect and sync up with others in a way that is productive and win-win for all parties involved. So I think what it comes down to in teams, and I see this around me, you see it in sports, you see it in politics, I see it in my companies, is how to really set up the team for success. Give everyone their piece of the responsibility, make sure people understand their roles. You know, we're my personal philosophy, and bleeds into my professional life as well, is that, you know, having like purely fixated roles where everyone's like in a very specific place is good on specific projects, but I also like people that have flexibility and a diversity of skills so that if they need to kind of shift into another area and fill in for someone that's out or step up because, you know, someone else might need help, instead of saying, well, that's not my job, you know, let someone else do it, having that openness and that ability, that resourcefulness to be able to make that shift and be of value to the team in a number of different roles, to me, that's the definition of a team player. And that's the kind of quality that really makes one attractive as an entrepreneur. And two entrepreneurs that are building teams, we're looking for players like that, people that can come in and just kind of roll up their sleeves and do whatever it takes, you know, to help the group succeed from a multi-skill standpoint, but really with a good attitude. And I think attitude counts and goes a long way. You want to really have a good blend of a proper attitude and obviously strong skill sets in your key players. So leadership's important. The systems and the ground rules are important. For example, is it a culture in a company or a political setting, whatever it may be, where when someone doesn't agree, they speak up right away and people could kind of voice their opinions? Or is it a culture where if the boss is talking or someone's presenting, you just kind of be quiet, even if in your head you're not sure, you have a question, you don't agree? But we don't kind of have an openness to that here. Or one might get in trouble for dissenting or disagreeing. I've been in some meetings recently, and you know, being the leader of certain projects and in companies where people working under me technically are disagreeing very actively. And it's a challenging situation, to be honest. I mean, it kind of creates a certain bit of tension. It can, but it also could open up an opportunity. Maybe that person's speaking up because they see a red flag or an opportunity to maybe do something in a different way. And so as the leader in those types of cases, I try my best, and it's something I'm certainly working on, to be open to the feedback, and at the same time also be strong where I have a firm kind of vision and idea or decision already made that I'm not willing to stand down or step back from. So it kind of goes both ways, this whole, I think we like to hope the concept or believe that one needs to be open as a leader and take all this feedback from all these sources, but being in that position, I would say, and observing other great leaders as well, one also has to be very defined and definitive and have a vision and know how to be firm about that when it counts and when it's time to get things done or to mobilize a group. And again, this is something I work on, both sides of that, the side of being more open and also the side of being firm and in a respectful fashion, and also being able to engage and try to explain and convince people about why, you know, the decisions are being made this way. I do think that kind of communication and transparency and sharing is an important part of the process. But at the end of the day, what I've found is you can't always convince everyone. Sometimes people are just stuck in their own viewpoints and ideas, and that's okay. That's something that hopefully the culture, you know, that's created, and it's the one I strive for, where there's no judgment, even when there's differences. So it's respectful, decisions are still able to be made, and then people still who even don't agree have to move forward with where the team's going. So this is, again, another analogy of a ship. If we're all on this ship together, we've all got to be rowing in the same direction or doing our required jobs, as per however the leadership or the captain is looking to steer that ship. And if one isn't comfortable with the direction of that ship, well, you know, at every port there's a chance to get off and find another one or build one's own path. I think this is a big topic, and it's something I speak with every single person I work with. I've been now kind of running or involved in a leadership role in my own companies basically for almost my whole career, 22 years. And not everyone gets to have that experience, and it's okay. I think it's an opportunity, you know, to do something for yourself and to build something and have a certain perspective on it. It's not for everybody. It's a high risk scenario, but I always tell people, you know, you're the CEO of me. I mean, it's something we write about, you know, in our book, you know, here 2020 Life Vision, and you know, in the Amazon store, and we have a corresponding app for it, and it's a chance for people to take a program, take a course to really determine what their vision is. And as the CEO of themselves, each individual has that right to get off a ship that doesn't align with their core values. You have to do what you love, you know, career-wise, and you have to be with people and with an organization and with leadership that you believe in and trust and feel that you can kind of give a commitment to and feel respected in the commitment that they, you know, give back to you. But it's, yeah, there is a hierarchy in the companies, but at a real energetic level, it's really should be an equal exchange, because each individual has that authority and that autonomy in their own life to kind of steer their own ship the way they want to. So maybe a better analogy than just one ship that we're all on is like a fleet of ships. It's an armada, and you want to be with your ship in that fleet, or you want to kind of veer off and join something else or try to lead something else and gather other people around your vision. That's always the conversation I have with people coming and working with for me in whatever capacity and the companies we're part of, that they have to make sure there's a strong alignment of values and skill sets and all the other things we need. But again, this goes back to overall kind of culture, philosophy, and attitude. And one other thing that's very important in that, saw an article today actually, Jeff Bezos talking about work-life balance. I didn't get to read the full thing, but you know, work-life balance, again, factors into what's the culture. I mean, if you're an investment banker coming out of college, you're expected to work 6-7 days a week, 80-90 hours a week. I've done it, not as an investment banker, but as an entrepreneur, working those 80-90 hour weeks, and used to really take pride in it. Took a lot of pride, and as you know, I'm a, you know, meticulous time tracker. I do believe life vision and balance and success happens when we are able to manage our energy, our time, our resources effectively, and there's no resource we have more valuable than our time, than our moment-to-moment, day-to-day, you know, 24-hour periods, and how we plan them, and whether you plan it meticulously or not, I believe it's important to get the most that we can, the most value we can out of that time. So as far as work-life balance goes, I'm in the more kind of 60-hour a week range nowadays. I think you know, anywhere between 40 and 60 is a good time frame, depending on your career and your goals at the moment and what kind of sprint you might be in with your projects. But it's important. It's important that we, you know, get our proper rest, get our proper diet, get our exercise, work on projects that are important to us, spend time with our family. So all the common things we hear about should be part of that balance. And a company, a country, a city, you know, does set a tone in, as far as what the culture and the expectations are in that culture. I've never been a 9-to-5 guy myself, a believer that you need to show up at your desk at this hour and then you check out at that hour. So I've always been much more flexible about that, and that's reflected in the organizations that I work with. Sometimes people come in and they try to change that, you know, try to come in and say, no, we need to be more this, and everyone needs to be here at the same time. And I get it. I understand, you know, they come from a more structured background and think that that structure could possibly help us, but it's again, these things are top down. So if the top person and people in the companies don't believe in that as a culture themselves and want to give others that flexibility and freedom, I do believe we're all adults. All the people we work with are generally adults, right? And so people should be able to be responsible, set their own schedules. and just make sure there's good communication and coordination. But again, that all factors into culture and how things are set up. What are the ground rules? What are the systems we put in place? And do people take advantage of those things, or do they work within that, appreciate it, and then give you their best possible, you know, selves, their best work? And I do believe that giving people that flexibility allows them to be more relaxed, have a better work-life balance, and then be more productive and happier, you know, with their work. So that's my philosophy there. Now, another key component that factors into all this is attribution, the concept of attribution or credit. How do people get credit for what they do when we're working on so many group-oriented and team-oriented projects? Right now, you hear people, you see what people write on their resumes, or you hear politicians talking about, well, I voted for this, or I brought that bill in. Whereas, you know, the reality is, or even a team, a sports team, there's always multiple players, coaches, and other people behind the scenes that are involved in any kind of success, as in any kind of failure, as in any kind of mediocrity, right? So whatever the outcome is, it's usually always more than one person. But within that group, there's different levels of what I like to call attribution, how we actually manage to give credit for, let's say, the revenue of a company to different people. And one thing we're working on now at Blue Liner, our agency, is actually creating a whole new model of how we measure performance and give feedback, and then align people's compensation directly with their attribution model that we build. And it's different for someone that's, let's say, a web designer versus someone in operations versus someone in sales. Everyone has different KPIs, right? Key performance indicators. And we want to be very transparent about that, make sure that it's, again, almost like a wearable device, something you get at least once a month. You get feedback about that from, you know, pure metrics, because almost everything can be turned into some kind of metric for productivity. Not everything, but almost everything. And a lot of times there's value you contribute. It's in very intangible ways. You might have talked to your colleague at work when they were having a bad day and gave them some personal advice. How do you measure that, right? I do believe there's a way, but it's not so easy. So you kind of have to, as a leader and as the people in the organization, look at the metrics, but also there's that intangible. There's those kind of soft skills, and there's just the vibes that people bring. Does someone come into a room in every meeting with kind of a negative attitude, you know, with kind of just a, you know, a kind of pessimistic energy? And even if that person performs well on their tasks, but if they're bringing a negative vibe to meetings, to client calls, to presentations, to whatever it may be, to just one-on-one interactions, that does have a negative price for the company. So there is a toll being taken that is hard to measure, but energetically it's there. So when it comes to attribution, feedback, and the contributions that we make, some of them could be very subtle and energetic, and others could be very kind of apparent and materially measurable. And as good leaders should kind of have a wide view and look at all the metrics, but also kind of see what the feelings are. And those feelings usually are shared by more than one person. So if you talk, if there's 50 people in a company and everyone knows, okay, each other, and you talk about one person to everyone else, you're generally going to get the similar sentiments for the most part. Sometimes there's factions and groups that kind of support each other, but you know, getting that 360-degree feedback is important. And that's something, as a small business, running fast, running lean, you don't have these big HR staffs. It's very hard to put that kind of process in place for performance reviews and things of that nature. But that is something that we're working on, and there's a lot of cool SaaS tools out there that allow smaller operating teams to still kind of offer and be consistent about giving that kind of review, that kind of feedback, because people really benefit from feedback. As someone who's often and continues to do their own thing, you know, and be kind of a real independent free thinker and initiator of businesses and ideas, taking feedback is a hard thing for me. It's not something I tend to look for in general. I tend to just arrive at conclusions and decisions after meditating on things and feeling generally solid about them when I do arrive there, because I feel like there's some guidance from another place that gives me confidence. So that's the feedback and guidance that I generally seek, which sometimes makes it hard for others to understand how I arrive at things. But that's my process. Even in that process, I need to learn and am learning all the time on how to take feedback from my business partners, from staff, from personal relationships, you know, from my 3-year-old son, who has a lot of feedback for me. And so one of the concepts we have, we talk about, you know, and again, I'll reference the 2020 Life Vision book and app, which we're planning to launch in early September, is building your own board of advisors. So the CEO of me concept, being and taking personal ownership and leadership in your own life, which each person must do at some point if they want to achieve their purpose and be happy, be fulfilled, feel like you're in charge of your own destiny. We have to kind of be the CEO of me, and at the same time, any good leader has advisors. So building a board of advisors that can give you feedback across all the different areas of your life. We like to break it down into these 7 pillars. We love the 7 pillars concept, so we moved it over from digital marketing to pretty much everything. So we have the 7 pillars, you know, of life, which are all the key areas: spirituality and money and relationships and work, personal health, environment, meaning your surroundings and environment. And in each area, you may have different advisors, either formally or informally. And I would recommend that as you do your goal setting, you think about who the people are that you trust, that you'd like to take feedback from, and then listen to them once in a while. Again, that's a hard thing for me, but it's, I have a lot of people I respect and trust and that I know are real experts in areas that I may have a piece of knowledge and understanding of, but I know that they dedicate their life to it. Let's say it's health and fitness or some other area. And I wanna vibe with that person from time to time and be able to take some feedback and maybe have them look with me at my life goals and personal goals so that I can improve and iterate, you know, another version of me. The best, you know, version of yourself is the one that continues to evolve and kind of update its bugs, right? I mean, we're always looking to kind of debug and unplug and reprogram ourselves, deprogram ourselves from all the things that happened to us in our, you know, childhood and other kinds of traumas and pain. You know, in one way or another, we're all doing some kind of healing and hopefully some kind of growing. And in order to avoid getting stuck in whatever way, professionally, personally, and if you are, it's a good sign. You know, if you're feeling stuck, if you're feeling like you just can't get over a certain hump, it's usually a good sign that there's something happening subconsciously and under all the day-to-day routines and apparent part of your life. There's something else under there. There's a place you can go to kind of clear something, clear some space so that maybe you can kind of take that leap and get to the next place in your journey. And in order to do that, it's great to have support, you know, from your team, whoever your personal tribe or team of supporters is. I like to call it, you know, board of advisors, to just kind of use the business analogy there. So a lot of different things. I know I've been kind of covering a lot of bases. We started talking about culture, both on the company level and on a country level. Talked about how to make connections and just respectfully share ideas. Leadership top-down, but also systems and how people kind of interact within an organization productively, effectively. Work-life balance, attribution, getting credit, giving feedback in a constructive way. Again, this everything I talk about applies both personally and professionally. You know, I just happen to be an entrepreneur that loves and lives largely, not entirely, for my work. So it tends to kind of all bleed together, and I always bring the analogy between spirituality and entrepreneurship and how, you know, the spiritual life and the life of self-discovery, if that's a path that, you know, one connects to, is very, very similar to the path of an entrepreneur, because you're literally trying to get to a place and discover something and build something and be creative. And there's tons of challenges, and every day you've got to try to figure out how to use the tools you have and kind of walk the path. And so to me, you know, building a company, building something from scratch, bringing it to life, figuring out how to make it succeed is, you know, a very thrilling process. And again, most of our projects are related to some kind of social impact or personal development, and, you know, Kid Coin Project, all being all about financial literacy and helping kids and people better manage their resources. So there's some kind of mission and vision that has a positive feel for society, you know, about almost everything we do and everything I'm involved in, and that's what kind of gets me up, what keeps me going. So, you know, it's really like in sync for me, at least, the entrepreneurship and the spiritual work. Being involved in so many things, the last point I want to bring up and kind of leave with this episode of our show is talking about our daily routines and habits. And, you know, yes, we talked about getting your rest and getting a good diet and all that to set up your day. You know, everyone has their own routines. There's so many routines we hear of successful people that help them in their life just kind of create some discipline, create some structure. So got to find a routine that works for you and also be flexible enough to shift on and off or go into different modes. You know, there's obviously a weekday routine and a weekend routine, and then we take a vacation, or then we have to travel for work. So what happens when we have to travel for work? Do we, you know, where we can't go to our gym and the normal routine we have? Do we just start, you know, we can't shop for our own food, so we just start disregarding our diet and our health because we're traveling for a week and say, I'll pick up again when I get home? That's one strategy, but there's other ways to not lose the positive benefits that you get from your normal routine when a shift happens. So being flexible and resourceful is important. But the one thing I wanted to get to within the routine that I have and all the different involvements I have, as I said, 7 companies that I'm involved in at some level that I have to give active attention to, and that at any given time I can get a call from someone that's urgent. And so I'm extremely spread thin, again, which is why time management is the most important thing for me, time and energy. So I just, you know, I didn't come up with this concept. There's actually a book on it called The One Thing. And I thought about that today as I was doing my meditation. And it's something I've come up with before, but I've failed to really implement it consistently. So I'm going to start again next week. And that is every single day picking one thing. It's not going to be the only thing I'm going to work on that day, because that's not realistic for me, at least. I always have to kind of be open and check on multiple things. So there's balls in the air, but there's going to be one thing each day, including weekends and weekdays. And we're going to try to set this up in advance. We'll say, okay, today's Monday, and Blue Liner, you know, our agency, is going to be the one most important thing today. So that means a couple things. A, I'm going to allocate and plan the most time I can to Blue Liner that day. Again, not everything I do is going to be Blue Liner. I got to leave some openness and flexibility to emergencies and other areas, but Blue Liner is my focus today. So what's the one thing I can do for this one company out of all the others that I could do to really advance whatever mission and goals we have, you know, with Blue Liner? And so hopefully within that day, if I work a 9-10 hour day, there'll be 4 or 5 hours or more that I could take, let's say, the website content or some other important project. Maybe it's a new client or a sales pitch, some kind of ROI model or this new compensation model. There's so many things in my Blue Liner plate that once I look at that one area, I'm going to, again, have to decide what's the one thing within that area that I really want to get done today or really want to contribute to and feel productive about. And then the next day, it could be Time Bug or it could be Kid Coin, right? So yeah, and then on weekends, obviously, you know, my son takes over my schedule, but, you know, give him his one full day, whether it's Saturday or Sunday, and then probably be with him the next day as well, but maybe that second day would have a different focus. So both personally and professionally, this kind of one thing concept amidst many things, but making that the most important thing each day is something that I'm going to bring back, because my task list and my task list for a day and all the ideas that come up gets very full very fast. That could be overwhelming, but I usually just get into a task mastering mode and start knocking them out. But that being said, I think the one thing is something I'll try. I'll report back. I encourage you to give it your own shot or put your own spin on it as well. So that's kind of our free flow for the day. Covered a lot of cool topics, and I hope it was enjoyable. I certainly enjoyed sharing. And we'll be back next week, which again, my third plug of the week, we're going to be taking the 2020 Life Vision book and the 30 steps within it, and I'll be actually recording the audio, because in our app that will be available in early September, as noted, we plan to not only list all the content, but also give people the chance to consume that content by hearing my voice. So you could either listen to the audio, read the copy in the app, and then you'll be obviously prompted to jump into the workbook section, where you then answer the questions that take you through each step in the journey. So, hope you pick it up and enjoy it. The app will also be have a freemium quality to it, so it'll be free. A lot of the content will be free to kind of digest and go through or listen. And then in a certain level, as you're going through all the forms and kind of putting in all your personal data, there'll be a limitation there where you have to pay if you want to continue. So love feedback, and looking forward to getting feedback, one of our topics for today, from you all, so we can keep iterating and improving and bringing our best version of this product, to the market. And in a similar fashion, hopefully we're all doing a little bit of that iterating every day in our own personal lives. So, take care and see everybody next week. Oh.